Hello and welcome to the last Albion Roar of the season here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are looking for our flip-flops in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the dust has settled on the season and we can now sit back and look forward to a record fifth season at the top table. So that means we can also sit back and reflect on what we did right, what we did wrong, and where we need to improve if we are to progress and not end the season looking over our shoulders. We can also look forward to the Euros, where we can offer congratulations and still scratch our heads about Ben White's call-up to the provisional England squad. So, as it's the last show of the season, we have called up the band, which means on cowbell, it's Andy Bass. On castanets, it's Marcus Hancock's. And on tuba, it's Alan Wares. Happy end of the season, guys. How are we all?
You weirdo.
Well, good, mate. Good.
Well, it was either going to be that or a kazoo.
Why is it I get the feeling I've just entered an episode of The Magic Roundabout? Could you just give us a brief overview of, you know, from the beginning of the season in mid-September to where we are now, what your thoughts on the season as a whole were? Let's start with you, Andy.
I thought it was a really good season. Certainly one of the more interesting ones that we've encountered. No shortage of incidents. It's been brilliant. The football's been fantastic. The drama's been there. Very memorable and enjoyable. And I think we've set a platform for an exciting season next season.
Yeah, Marcus, it's been a strange season of no crowds, some crowds, no crowds, pay-per-view, no pay-per-view, the European Super League, the collapse of the European Super League, 8,000 people back at the Amex for the last game. It's been a bit crazy.
Yeah, it has. I agree with Andy. There's not much more to sort of, as a season as a whole, I think, you know, it's fair to say, it's good because we stayed up, which is always the first target, as everybody would probably agree. Obviously, it's been, you know, frustrating in parts for obvious reasons, which has been well talked about on the Albion Roar about not sticking the ball in the goal. But other than that, it's great to have fans back. It's great to finally finish the season. It seems like it's been a really long season this year, even though there's been no break. And yeah, you know, the games have come thick and fast. But it's I think it's good. It's nice to have a break.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like a long season, Andy, because there wasn't much of a break between the end of last season and this season. So it all kind of like feels like it's all been squeezed together, really.
It has all kind of blurred into one. And it's weird because the games are all over the shop. Nothing's like, you know, very rarely at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, you've got like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, pretty much every day of the week, there was a game on. So it was very difficult for you to sort of get your bearings until we really got into the nitty gritty of the season. And and there were varying different stages where we thought we were doing well, stages where we thought, oh, we might be letting this slip away. And then it all going back to being, you know, nice and dandy at the end. It ebbed and flowed a lot. I mean, it was a lot went on, and I really enjoyed having the football on the TV all the time. It was really weird. It's going to be weird when we do get back to normal football, not at least having the opportunity to watch kind of every game and keep up with what's going on everywhere.
Al, it's been a season where, if you look at the stats, they're pretty much identical to what they were last year in terms of games won, games drawn, games lost. They are identical to what it was the season before. Mm. Defensively, we've conceded less goals. That's really the only difference. So, I mean, talk to me about the progress this season.
Well, I think what we've got is a surer footing of what we're doing. I mean, the stats do actually lend a line. This whole notion of the league table never lies. Now, we've always subscribed to that theory, and I think we've got to this time. However, we clearly played a lot better than the table would actually have us believe. And so where we've progressed is obviously in defence. Now, I think it's only about half a dozen fewer goals, but it's in those appropriate games. you know, you could win a league title only scoring 60 goals. It's when you score those. It's like Leicester when they won the title. They only had, you know, an average of 30-odd% possession. But they had the, you know, they did the important thing. So where we've progressed is clearly we're playing a better brand of football. You know, it's not every game where we've bossed every single minute. But what we have done is that, for instance, against the top six, we have shown very little fear. And I think that is so important if we are going to progress further still. We know that the bottom six really ought to be there for the taking. It's a statistical anomaly that we haven't done so. Where we've regressed, I can't help feeling, is the fact that for the quality of football that's improved, the finishing really hasn't. Now, you could say it's the same number of goals, but that's probably what that number of goals was more deserved last season.
I think it's less goals than it was last year, Andy.
No, it's two more.
Was it two more? Okay.
Two more, but we conceded about half a dozen fewer. So there is similarity. But what we've got is that it's also where we're picking up the points. And we are picking up points in places that we really, really weren't expecting to do so.
Okay, well, we're going to come to that shortly, Al. But let's just have a brief overview. We're not going to go through every game, but I've highlighted some key games. And one of them was actually against the team that finished second, which was early in September. And it was a game where, I mean, it was so stereotypical Man United, really. I mean, you talk about Fergie time, but this was even beyond Fergie time. This was after the final whistle had actually blown. I'm still absolutely spitting feathers. Who wants to go first on this one?
Because can I take this one first? Because what you're highlighting there with the thing that happened at the end of the game, I think actually is only a part of the story. I think that the biggest story is, A, that we hit the woodwork five times in one match. How careless is that? But two, just how we took the game to Manchester United. And I think certainly against the bigger clubs, it was a portent of things to come. You know, Man United, they weren't at their best, but then, you know, we were a lot better. You know, can you imagine if even three of those chances that had hit the woodwork have gone in, we'd have scored five or six against Manchester United. Who on earth does that?
And it wouldn't have flattered us either.
Exactly. So, but I've got the story of the game. The thing at the end is just what makes it, and it was perfectly legitimate. It was perfectly legal, apart from, yes, I get your point about the extra time that was unnecessary. But I mean, the actual notion of the penalty at the end, sorry, it was within the laws of the game, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the stat here of how many times we have hit the woodwork this season. Does anyone want to hazard a guess?
15.
I was going to say 15.
I'm going to say 12.
39.
Yeah, what?
No, it's not.
Seriously?
No. 39?
That's an average of one a game.
Yeah, I was going to say. No. I know we scored, I know we got the perfect hat trick, didn't we, against Man United of hitting a post? But
Crossard did, didn't he?
Crossard did. Solo efforts.
No, I'm not having that. I want to recount.
It was actually 7. It was actually 17.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But I mean, we all agree. I think that the final whistle should have been blown after Solly March equalised. I mean, it was a terrific goal by Rashford in that game. But
yeah.
I mean, but therein lies. Sorry, Adi. This is something that every manager would tell you. And they shouldn't have to at Premier League level. You know, they'll tell you at a kids level. Bevan Dean, Barcelona, and Preston Panthers. You play to the whistle. You play to the final whistle. You know, and the nature of what got us the penalty against us was absolutely balmy. You know, a raised arm at a corner. You know, trying to defend a header. Mm. Of all things, you know, a raised arm, you wouldn't, you know, you'd be just as angry about it if it was the 12th minute, let alone the 12th minute of injury time or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, to be honest, I think I'm still going to be angry about this when we do this show next season. But
me too.
It's
unless it comes back and actually benefits us.
No, well, I don't think it ever will. But let's move on. I mean, the next game I've got highlighted here was actually it was another defeat, but it was a defeat away at Spurs. But it was a game that had a few talking points in it, and most of them were before the first whistle and the changes to the team, Andy.
Yes, obviously, first appearance of Robert Sanchez in goal.
What a lift off that bloke has had.
That's the Harry Kane, isn't it? The backing into Lallana Harry Kane doing his usual, England captain, I can foul whoever I like, referees don't give it type thing, isn't it?
The thing I remember this game for is that the outrageous decision to give Tottenham that penalty was a foul to us.
Outside the box.
Well, funnily enough, I've got another game highlighted on my list, which the same thing happened. Yeah. I'm sure you know which that one was. And Andy, that there was other things in that game as well, including a first and only goal for Tarek Lamptey.
Well, yeah, I was going to mention that. I think this is another great sort of coming out game for Tarek when he really started to impress the general footballing public and coming more to the notice of people around the game. Took his goal really, really well. And I just thought it was a very impressive performance from us. I thought we took the game to them. We went one down completely unjustly. And again, going to a place that traditionally we've not done particularly well in the past and looking like we belonged there. There was definitely a theme going throughout these early games, even if the results weren't going our way, which is as is its wont in this season. But we were setting our stall out and just saying, yeah, we're here. We're not here to make up the numbers. We look like we deserve to be on the same pitch as these, in quotes, big teams. And it was a shame. And of course, you know, to concede a goal to Gareth Bale, who finally decided to turn up.
That was the only time he did, wasn't it?
In fairness, I think Bale played very well towards the season. He was certainly a disinterested passenger at the beginning of the season. Mm. And to concede the goal to him was particularly annoying. But again, another good performance. I thought we were robbed by the official in that game.
But with your Albion tinted glasses on, Andy, would you say that our goal should have stood, given the fact that you looked at a possible foul by Solly March before that?
Yes, it should have stood because Solly got to the ball first. We had this discussion I can definitely see why it was looked at by VAR. I think, Solly just piled in, but both players were going for the ball. Solly got there first.
Okay, well, let's move it on from there. There was a first goal for Danny Welbeck at Aston Villa, which was wonderful goal, certainly for consideration.
It was appalling defending, I remember that.
It was. But the next game on the list for me here was the home game. Again, Marcus, it was against Liverpool. And we gave the champions at the time a really good game and probably should have won.
Definitely. Again, I think this is one of the litany of Aaron Connolly amongst many of the games. Poor chap, but hopefully he'll sort himself out and stop going partying and so on and so forth and concentrate on playing football. But that aside, it was a game that we should have won. Hats off to Pascal Gross for his 99th minute penalty or whenever it was. I mean, that was, coolly tucked away, under pressure. And at the time, of course, I know Liverpool had a substandard season by their recent achievements. It's always good to get a point off. I mean, we got four in the end, but, it's always good to get a point off Liverpool, especially as before the game, you would have said, yeah, we're probably going to lose that, et cetera, et cetera. But we didn't. And, really, we should have won it. But, hey-ho, them's the breaks, as they say.
This was also the game where Neil Maupay got strategically injured after missing a penalty.
He subbed himself, didn't he, after missing the penalty, basically. I think he realised, another scuff. and get me off. That's
Alan.
It.
Again, another superb performance against one of the top sides. I mean, how many chances, how many teams could ever say that they, how close, rather, did we get to doing the double over Liverpool? And certainly deserved to, because I think we were a better side in both games against them.
Yeah.
But it's we were so close to doing the double. I mean, Marcus's point is absolutely right. We've got 4 points against them. Superb. But actually, can I also pick up on something that Marcus has reminded me of? Now, we're going to talk about our player of the season presently. And I think it's fair to say that the chap I'm going to mention is not really in the running for it. But I do want to say that for me, Pascal Gross has been the surprise and the culmination of what Graham Potter is all about this season. I mean, for me, I thought that at the end of last season, he was a little bit of a busted flush. We know he's got no pace, but the number of times he's executed his slow motion Cruyff turn, the number of times he's put the ball on a plate for our strikers, what they've done with it is another matter entirely. Gross is not going to be player of the season, but for me, far more so, in my opinion, than the first season where he did win it, he should have been more in the running for player of the season, because I thought he was absolutely outstanding. And when I normally feel a certain thing of, oh my God, it's Pascal Gross, or oh my God, it's XYZ, I felt really comfortable and confident when Gross was on the ball. I think he had a brilliant season. Andy, what do you reckon?
I totally agree with everything you just said. He was in my honourable mentions.
Yep. He was on my third.
But I think he's been absolutely brilliant. I mean, very much like yourself, I think even said on this show, I thought he was too old, too slow, was going to be superseded by the new, younger, hungrier midfield, and he's completely made me look like a lemon because he's been super, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Well, he has kind of reinvented himself a little bit because, I mean, he has been playing various positions across the pitch. I mean, he was top of the assist charts again. He's got 8 assists this season. And he was, I think at the beginning of this season, we were talking that we were expecting, I mean, we were talking before the window closed, that we're talking that maybe he could be one that might have been moved on. But he, not only that, he started most of the games, and he's certainly one of the first names on Potter's team sheet.
Absolutely, 100%. I think there is a certain level of reinvention, but I think he's just done his job really well wherever he's been asked to play, whether that's in the centre of midfield or a right wing back. And let's face it, we mentioned this on the show recently, just about everyone's had a go at playing at one of the wing back spots and done really well. So I'm raising a glass to Pascal Gross because I think he's had an astonishingly good season.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, let's move on. I mean, there was an incident in the home game against Southampton. It was a time where fans were allowed back in the stadium, only a small number, of course. Southampton got a penalty for a foul outside the box, which was correctly called by the referee, which was then overruled by VAR. But the next game that I've got on my list here was the first game of the year, actually. The home game against Wolverhampton Wanderers. We scored first, but then we went in at half-time at 3-1 down, and it was a magnificent turnaround.
Yeah, it was, because I remember sitting, watching that at home, just hurling all sorts of insults for the television out of frustration.
One player in particular?
No, there's collectively.
All of them.
I know it was not Dan, let's face it, Dan Byrne has had better days. I think he would agree, but it wasn't all his fault. But it was, we just looked like we were blowing it, and I think we were as fans getting slightly shaky on the season at that point, thinking, yeah, this thing could go south quite quickly, because notoriously we're terrible in sort of January, February time, and we normally sort of like haul it all back a little bit later. Yeah. And it looked like we were going to put ourselves in some trouble that really we shouldn't have been in. And this is another element of progress that this team has made. And I think this is a game that really stands out. I think it kickstarted our whole 2021, where I think we've been excellent. But this team did not feel sorry for itself. It didn't, it picked itself up. It got back in the game. It got back in the game quickly. I mean, literally, kick off, run down, get the penalty, mm-hmm, back in the game. Then there was only one team that was going to win it, in my opinion. That's a mental toughness that this group of players has shown in adversity at the highest level that I don't think has been present there in our Premier League seasons up until now. Mm. I trust us a lot more than I did in the past to fight things out, and this was one game that really sort of proved it to me. And I think that is something again that we can build on, something that's there in the background now in the players' minds before they go into matches, is they never feel like they're out of games. And if you're going to survive in this league, you really need to have that belief. Sometimes it'll pan out, sometimes it won't.
Yeah. I mean, that was a thing, isn't it? Under Hughton, I mean, again, it's you know, been and gone, but that was a thing. You know, he went 1-0 down, and if you went 2-0 down, then you really thought, well, that's game over then. Well, at least with this team, I know we've been missing chances, but Andy's right. You know, the way that we play, you know, if the strikers and the midfielders and just about anybody else who's presented with a goal can stick it in the net, then we've always got a chance, which we probably never had, you know, with our previous manager, certainly towards the end of his tenure anyway.
Okay. There's probably, I could count on the fingers of one hand, the number of games this season we've had where we just haven't looked like doing anything, you know. So, that half-time, that Wolves game, and I thought that was one of them. And so the turnaround, like you say, I mean, as Andy said, within the first minute, the turnaround was astonishing. I'm thinking Leicester away, I'm thinking Everton away, I'm thinking the first half against Sheffield United away. There's bits and pieces where you think, and you can't expect, even when we've won divisions, there hasn't been every game that we've absolutely bossed. You have off days. But to have a Premier League season where you know that we've only been poor in about five or six games, as opposed to, you know, being in the game, not necessarily getting the result, but being in the game, you know, I think that's a massive testimony to everyone.
Okay, we've got to move on now because we've got a couple of more games to get through. But the next one on my list was a big one, which was the 1-0 home win against Spurs. And that was actually the first home win of the season. We kind of got the monkey off the back. The feeling in the stadium that day was just one of a massive relief that we can actually win at home. I mean, it wasn't a brilliant match, and Spurs were not... Well,
can someone remind me of the goal? Because I can't remember it.
Trossard in the first
game. It was a Trossard. It was about the 8th minute or something. And it was
19th minute. And he
I think it was Grace fired it across, and he got actually like took it first time.
Yeah, it was a great finish.
It was a good finish, yeah. Need more of that.
But the next one on my list was a big one as well, where we beat the current champions on their own turf, and it proved that we could go to the big clubs and actually get a win.
We did. I mean, this was just before. I mean, Liverpool then sort of had a couple of rickets against other teams. I mean, they'd lost, I think, the week before to Burnley, but Burnley was the archetypal smash and grab. Where they won 1-0. I mean, they literally battened down the hatches and just dug in. But, you know, we took the game to Liverpool and thoroughly deserved to win that. That was no sort of 1-0 smash and grab. As far, you know, they'll say, oh, 1-0, probably Brighton had one shot. No. Burnley did that. We didn't. We did the exact opposite and deserved those 3 points.
And Andy, it was actually also the last appearance of the season of Solly March.
Yes. You know, a player who I do think we missed, despite the fact that we did actually pretty well without him. But I definitely think we missed his invention. I think he had definitely improved as a player throughout this season. And we were fighting. He was finally realising his own potential. We'd frustratingly fallen short of what we thought he could be prior to this season. And he was finally stepping up to the plate.
For everything I said about 10 minutes ago about Pascal Gross, I'd say exactly the same about Solly March. He was a revelation. It's probably arguably his best, I'm not going to say season, it was his best two-thirds of a season, probably since he joined the club, given that the level that we're playing at. He made the left wing-back berth his own. I know you queried, AD, as to whether you could consider him a defender, and yet when I've seen him play at left-back before, and as an orthodox left-back, he has done well. But to play him at left wing-back, knowing full well that he can actually then bomb on now and again, should he wish to do so. And let's face it, if you're going to have anyone bombing on, you'd rather have it as Solly March rather than Dan Byrne. Not that I have anything against Dan Byrne. This is not a Dan Byrne witch hunt here. But Solly March, I thought that he made that berth his own. And when we lost him, I think there was a big hole. Yes, it was brilliant that we had a squad that could replace someone as good as him. But, you know, I'd still rather have Solly March back. Can I also say about that game, even though it was probably only his 5th, 6th, maybe his 10th appearance, I don't know. I think it was also the making of Robert Sanchez. I mean, we remember, what was it, a 93rd minute corner that Liverpool had. Here we are, we're on the cusp of a brilliant, brilliant victory. Please don't spoil it. Yeah, I'll bite your arm off for a point. But, you know, when it gets to that, the corner comes over and he absolutely mows everyone down.
That's right, yeah.
Absolutely astonishing.
Yeah. So we're going to come to. I think we're going to come to that later on, actually, Al. But I should point, having listened to you to get what our predictions were for at the beginning of the season, I did listen to the first show of the season, and I did actually move Solly March on to Bristol City, where he was going to be managed by Chris Hughton. What am I know? Okay, let's just quickly. I've only got another couple of games left on here. One of which was away to West Brom, where we missed two penalties. Lewis Dunk scored a good goal that was disallowed, and then disallowed again.
Well, here's the thing about this particular game. Yes, our results against these teams were rubbish, but we should have won all of them.
Yeah.
You know, this game, Dunk scored a goal. It was wrongly disallowed, and but we still created plenty of chances. We missed sitters and we missed two penalties. So the opportunities were there. On any normal day, if we played like a normal football team, we'd have won that game. We played comfortably better than West Brom in that game. Mm-hmm. We just failed to make the most of the opportunities we were given in it. And that is on us. That is our fault. We didn't deserve to win that game. We had the opportunity to win it. We didn't take that opportunity.
I mean, I think the key thing with that game, when you watch Sam Allardyce's interviews after the game, where he's absolutely wetting himself laughing, I don't know how we got away with that.
And so he should. If I was him, I'd have been laughing as well. We deserved to be laughed at that day.
Talking about playing against bottom six sides, you say we should have won all of them. I would say that the game against Fulham away was the nearest of nil-nil draws. That was... Go on then, Mark, because you like talking sort of boring stuff. Go on, mate. Tell us how good that game was.
Well, if you've got some paint and put it on a wall and then sit there and watch it dry, then that probably be some way to see what that game was like. But to be fair, you know, a point away from home against those teams is not the end of the world. It's the home games. It comes down to the home games. You know, I know we lost to Sheffield United away, okay, but then Sheffield United also beat Man United earlier in the season. So, you know, these things go in swings and roundabouts. But it is, you know, the home games. Even the West Brom away would have been fine, but we drew with them at home 1-1. And again, as Andy said, you know, we missed chance after chance after chance. And then second up, we go in 1-0 up, and in the second half, you know, it all falls apart and West Brom score, and then you're like, oh, here we go again.
My sort of point I was trying to make was that I just think it's a myth that we fail to create chances in these games, and that we can't break these teams down. We did break them down, but we just fluffed our lines. Sheffield United at home, we missed two chances from 6 inches out in the last 5 minutes to win it. I mean, we did create the chances, even though
we're not very good at that.
Even though it is a myth that we cannot create chances against these teams that sit back. We can, but what we can't do is take all of those chances, and that's what we need to improve.
Except Fulham away. Because no one
except Fulham away, which literally I've only just woken up from about half an hour.
Okay. But the last game on the list, I suspect we're going to talk about later, which is, of course, the Man City at home game. But we'll come to the later on. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. This show, as ever, is brought to you, and we thank you ever so much for your continued support, Phil, with oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil this week has given us his shirt of the season, which is, I actually really like this. I think it's got a mixed reviews from Al.
Well, I really like this shirt. It is very unusual. So it's a plain white shirt, which gets unplained by a whole host of what looks to be like historical prints of old football teams from, you know, football past. With Red Star Club and LA Red Star written all over it. So I am going to hazard a very unobvious guess that this is Red Star FC from France. It's sponsored by Vice. This has got hipster football written all over it. And I do believe if you live in France and so can't get to Hamburg to support St. Pauli, these are your boys if you live in France.
Okay. Well, I think Andy, we'll stop that there because you have absolutely nailed it. It is Red Star. Not to be confused with the Red Star from Belgrade, of course. But this is what Phil has to say about it. Here is your shirt of the season. Chosen well because I think it's one of the best looking kits from anywhere in the 2020-21 season. This is the 2021 away shirt of French Championnat side Red Star FC, who finished this season in seventh. They go by with the somewhat uninspired nickname of Les Trois Rouges, which isn't really a nickname, but they also have a couple of others, Les Audiens, after the suburb in Paris from which they hail, and the Vert et Blanc, after their home colours of green and white. Home is a 10,178 capacity Stade Bauer, and in truth, the average gates there are between 1,000 and 2,000. The side was formed as Red Star Français in 1887 by Jules Remet. Yes, that Jules Remet. The club is a little bit of a mystery, but is thought to be named after the British governess to Paris, who was considered the godmother of the club, and she had links to the historic shipping company Red Star Line. They've played at all levels of French football pyramid, including 19 seasons in the top flight, most recently in 1974-75, and they've also won the Coupe de France five times. Red Star are the third oldest football team in France. Who can guess the two older sides?
Bordeaux.
And the other one, sorry, what year did you say Red Star FC was formed?
1887.
Oh, I'm going to throw in Eugénice.
No, I'll give you a clue. Links with John Byrne?
Le Havre.
Oh. Le Havre. Yes. Okay. Oh. There are a few links to the UK. Current Red Star striker David Bellion played for Sunderland, Man United and West Ham between 2001 and 2006. Right back, Gigan Demel played 76 appearances for West Ham between 2011 and 2015 and finished his career at Red Star. There is a Brighton link-ish. French winger Stéphane Lemaitre joined our under-21 side in 2009 and left us for Crawley. So, yeah, he's dead to me. So thanks for that, Phil. And thank you, as ever, for your continued support of the show. And, of course, you can see this shirt and hundreds of thousands others at oldfootballshirts.com. Okay, before we move on, I just want to talk about the big news story this week when Gareth Southgate named his provisional England squad for the Euros. And there was a surprise inclusion in there, which I'm obviously we wish many congratulations to Ben, and we're absolutely thrilled for him. And it's amazing that that Gareth Southgate has cleared his Brighton myopia and included a Brighton player in the squad. But the rule of thought is maybe he's got the wrong one.
Well, to be honest, I think Southgate was quite clear about why he picked Ben this time around, and it's because he's a younger player than Dunk. I think we were all accepting that Lewis's window of opportunity is sadly shut and unjustly shut in pretty much all of our opinions, because he's the best English centre half in the league at the moment.
Fully agreed. Yeah.
But I don't really want to talk about that. I'd rather celebrate Ben's inclusion. He is. Again, we're talking about how have we progressed this season. Ben White had a fairly shaky start to this season, I thought. I thought he was getting caught out of position a few times. And he was moved around. He was moved around. He wasn't playing in a settled position. Second half of the season, I think he's been absolutely superb. I think he's worth calling. I think he's earned this call-up. I don't think you know, that this is undeserved at all. I think he's been brilliant. I think he has improved. He's got up to speed with the Premier League. He's brilliant in possession. Some of his tackling is great. I thought he was brilliant. Oh, we're going to talk about Man City in a minute, but I thought he was great against Foden. I don't care what anybody says. Foden would have beaten anybody for that goal. Not Ben's fault at all. The tackle he did on him in the first half. Show me another centre-half in the country that can do that.
I think with Ben White is that he's kind of an upgrade on Eric Dyer, who's probably coming to the end of his, in the twilight of his international career. And, you know, Southgate does want a sort of utility, in inverted commas, player. And, you know, if you need to stick Ben White in centre midfield as a defensive, then fine, but he can also play in defence. He's a good asset to the squad. Whether he'll be a first teamer, of course, whether he'll actually make the final cut, I don't know, but it's fully deserved. And quite clearly the utility role probably will suit him. And he'll probably make a few appearances for England coming off the bench as and when, you know, if he's in the squad and, you know, part of a tournament and he need to dig in. Well, fully deserved.
Do we think he'll make the final squad?
If he does, it's because he's a utility player and Gareth might think, well, I can use him for two spots, which frees up another one. I think he would be on the bench. He wouldn't start a game, but I can certainly see circumstances where Southgate think, well, maybe I could use him in the last 10-15 minutes of a game.
I think flip a coin as to whether he's going to make the final cut. Flip a coin. Yeah, I mean, his utility status is understood. Yeah, we know him as a defender. It is a kind of a funny thing that us Brighton fans can look on him as nominally the third best defender, but I don't think that's necessarily why he's there. He's not a pure out-and-out centre-back. I think the only thing that really grates, and it really shouldn't, but it does, is that when you see on social media Leeds United fans trying to claim him as one of our own, go away. We made him. He's ours. This is testimony to the likes of John Walling and Simon Rusk and Andrew Crofts and all those players that brought him through. You have to remember that this guy is still a rookie. It's his first year, and he's done as a rookie brilliantly. Yeah, there's been a lot of hype around him. Yeah, and it's because he was at Leeds. He was at Leeds.
For 30 million, didn't they? I mean, they really wanted him. I mean, serious money bid. So,
I would like to point out that if he was a bad player, then obviously the sainted Leeds manager would not have.
He also wouldn't have touched him with a barge pole. Absolutely.
When
they took him on, he was a work in progress. Yes, he brought him on a little bit, but sorry, no one other than Brighton have the right to claim the credit for Ben White's progression.
Okay, just quickly before we move on, we've got to talk about the other players that have made the international squads. Rob Sanchez, for instance, what a season! What a season for him.
Okay, go on, Andy, because I mentioned this earlier, and you sort of ummed and ahed about it. Go on, describe the elevation of Robert Sanchez since December.
Just astonishing, And to be honest, reading between the lines of what the various backroom staff at the Albion have been saying, this is not a surprise for them. This was always the plan for Sanchez to get in the team. I think they really liked him, and then when they had a little smidgen of doubt about Matty's contribution to the side, they had no qualms about putting him in, and this was their plan for him all along. Again, brilliantly managed. Just shows how well the Albion use the loan system to genuinely develop players so that they can come back improved and play for us rather than just get farmed out to other teams. This is our intent. This is how we intend to use the loan system. And he's been fantastic.
Well, let's just move on then to how bad a pundit we actually are. And
pundit or soothsayer.
Well, there is that. So let's start with the wild card predictions we all made at the beginning of the season.
Go on, then.
And I hate to say this, but one of us was right.
Ooh.
Why would you hate to say it? Celebrate it. Okay, who said what and who was right and who was catastrophically wrong?
Okay, Marcus, what did you say?
I can't remember.
Marcus, your wild card was that we will record our first win against either Chelsea, Liverpool, or Man City. And we
did. I did, didn't I? Yeah, oh, I remember that well now, obviously. There we go.
Al, you said we would score another overhead kick, which Biss nearly did, to be fair.
It did.
Yeah. Andy, you said we score 50 plus goals.
What did we get?
41.
I said that we would have three players scoring 10 or more goals.
Well, if they were any good, that would have happened.
Yeah, it would have done. Yeah.
Because believe me, they had the chances created for them. Here is a plate. Here is some food. Help yourself. No, they throw it in the bin.
They're all on diet.
Yeah.
Neil Maupay had 71 shots. Trossard had 58. Bissouma 42. They were the top three.
And most of Bissouma's ones are still in orbit, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, also, we had red cards. Al said Webster. Me and Marcus said Dunk. Andy was doing an interview with another publication at the time and didn't answer. Breakthrough from the 23s. I said two. Marcus now said none, but Al did make remark. At the time, he said, yeah, unless some rookie goalkeeper gets given a chance. He did.
Thank you.
So we all had a go at the points we would get off the supposed top six.
Go on.
Marcus, you said 12. Al, you said 10. I said 10. The answer, 11.
Ooh! So we're all right.
You're going to mention Man United here now, aren't you, AD?
Well, yeah, technically, because I think that if the referee was doing his job correctly and had blown the whistle when he should have blown the final whistle, which was after Solly had equalised, which should have been the last kick of the game, that would have been 12.
So, I didn't know you felt this way, AD. I really didn't.
No. Well, the referee made a bad judgment call. Let's go there. I'm still maintaining that if the Amex was full that day, that wouldn't have happened.
No.
He would have blown the whistle after he would have, yeah, after Solly equalised, he would have blown the whistle. That was literally, that should have been the last kick of the game. And he somehow managed to find an extra 3 minutes.
Question of speculation here, Marcus, for you.
Yeah.
How do you think the crowd would have reacted if it was a full house and what happened at the end of the United game happened?
I think we're a bit more restrained from pitch invasions and things like that. But the end of the United game, you mean?
As in the penalty and the whole sort of...
Oh, blimey. Hard to say, but outrage would have been the word, I think. Yes. I don't know how the crowd would, yeah. I mean, if you could throw things, no, they wouldn't. I mean, we're quite a civilised bunch, but there certainly would be a few people probably making their way to the referee's car.
Marcus, that would have been a moment of the season, clearly. But Andy Bass, let's have your moment of the season.
Walking into the Amex for the Man City game.
Yeah, irrespective of what was going to happen later.
It was just the pre-match ambience, seeing people in person that I hadn't seen for ages, feeling like a football fan again, and being back in it felt so different. It was absolutely fantastic, and I'm so glad I had the opportunity to go.
Marcus, the same question to you.
Well, I think I would agree with that, actually. It's having the fans back, you know, what a great game. I don't feel like I can add to that, to be quite honest with you.
Can I say in that case, along the same lines, my moment of the season, bearing in mind that obviously you and I, AD, had been to the games, I mean, it was momentous that we went to a game, you know, finally, where there was 8,000, you know, not 30,000, but there was 8,000. So as much as Andy says when he walks into the ground, I fully get that. I would say the final whistle at the same game. That's when, you know, we realise that actually that there is something about this team, this crowd, this club, and the symbiosis between all three, that's when you realise there's something unquantifiable and something a little bit magic that actually could, should the things be in place, could take us forward to that next magic step, whatever that might be.
Yeah, and we playing Manchester City, I mean, in our most recent history, they are a team that do crop up a lot. First game of the Premier League, FA Cup semi-final, you know, and to finally win and to win in that manner after being 2-0 down, it was such a magical moment. I mean, there are plenty of other moments in the season which we could pull out. I mean, you mentioned one earlier, Al, which was actually, I did have them as my moment of the season, actually. Which was that claiming of the cross by Bob Sanchez. That was a moment which is like, yes, we're going to win this, and we're actually going to beat one of these teams which we'd struggled to get points off in the past. And that was a moment, winning that game against Spurs, getting that home hoodoo off our backs. And actually, towards the end of the season, we actually did quite well at home as well. So,
can I just also point out that for every game that you and I attended as part of the press pack, I didn't see us win. You did. I didn't.
Well, it's your fault then.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Oh, happy to take the slings and arrows, mate. Believe me.
Jonah of the year goes to you, Al.
Yeah, fine. I'll avoid that.
But Al, you did see us beat Blackpool, which leads us on to the next question, actually, because that was a contender. There was a goal in that game which was a contender for goal of the season.
It's certainly a contender and worthy of it. And given the season that the chap in question has had, perfectly fitting for the role he played. Although, having said that, Ibrahima's shooting is shocking. I'm going to go for goal of the season, and it is a Premier League goal of the season. And it's a match that you mentioned earlier. You mentioned Welbeck scoring his first goal for us. I'm going to go for the winning goal in that match, which was Solly March's curler into the top corner. Superb build-up, lovely cross across the back of the penalty area. There's Solly March, right peg, which, let's face it, for him, 99 times out of 10 is just the standing on. But he used it, a little bit of a bobble, into the top corner, 2-1. Thank you very much. Jack Grealish, start grizzling because you always do. And we'll take those 3 points. Superb. That is my goal of the season.
Okay, Marcus?
Mine is going to be against the Leeds United away. Again, another goal with fantastic build-up, proper one-touch football from beginning to end. And even Malpai couldn't miss that one. So but that's the type of goal that, you know, sums up Potter ball in it for me. And it's just a shame that we didn't do it a bit more often. But yeah,
and Marcus, the pitch that day was absolutely awful. Yeah,
that's the other thing as well. I mean, you know, and also it's always nice to get one over on. I mean, we got 6 points off of Leeds this season, so thank you very much.
Well, you're talking about goals impossible. Another fantastic goal of that ilk was Trossard's goal, which turned out to be the winner at Southampton as well.
Yeah,
excellent goal.
What's your goal of the season,
yeah,
mate?
My goal of the season, recency bias, Leandro Trossard's goal against Manchester City. Absolute pure class.
Mm. And still here.
Incredible control, discipline, putting Diaz on his arse 2 or 3 times, picking the right moment, not panicking, but actually genuinely thinking about how to get that ball in there. Absolute world class. That goal gets better every time I see it. Fantastic. And I think if Trossard can get some more belief in himself, we could have a real player there, because that was superb.
AD, what's your goal of the season?
My goal of the season. There's so many. I mean, generally speaking, I like I like ones that go that arrow into the top corner, like Bissouma's goal at Everton. But I'm actually going to go for Danny Welbeck's goal against Leeds, because that turn that put the whole defence on their backside, and finishing with aplomb was just absolutely wonderful. But that turn was just sublime, and it showed us what a Rolls Royce of a player that he actually is. Absolutely. And I'm hoping we get to see him in the Brighton shirt again next season, because I think there's more to come from him. I think Potter will be able to teach him how to be a little bit more selfish. But I mean, anyone that we bring in that might play alongside him will score goals, because he's just a fabulous footballer.
Mm. Which leads us on to the blue ribboned. You know, forget the official supporters club or the official Albion stuff. It's the official Albion Roar player of the season. Now, what we've done is we've asked everyone who came onto the show this season, and we're talking over 40 people here. Thank you, everyone, to everyone who's come onto the Albion Roar and offered their valuable insights and opinions and their contributions. We always appreciate you coming onto the show and supporting us. It's brilliant. Thank you for all those who have been here. We've asked everyone to come and name their top three. Unsurprisingly, it's been a two-horse race. Gentlemen, would you like to actually guess who the two-horse race is? Yeah, quite obviously.
Is this the two horse race as predicted by Andy Ritchie?
Not quite, but unsurprisingly, the two horse race from our contributors has been between Lewis Duncan, Yves Bissouma, and another. So third place was always these two plus another. So it gives me great pleasure to announce that in third place, the another award goes to Joel Veltman.
Oh, yes. Well, good. Good.
Excellent. Good choice.
Excellent. Yeah.
And yes, apart from that, then there's broad daylight between second and third. I mean, we're talking seriously broad daylight. But for everyone that's been onto the Albion Roar, the Albion Roar player of the season for this season is Lewis Dunk.
Yay!
Having said that, I've got a feeling that each of us four have voted for Yves Bissouma, haven't we?
Yeah, I have.
Yes, we have.
No, it's done. Pascal Gross.
Okay, Marcus, take us through your thought processes as to your top three.
Well, basically, Lewis Dunk, because he's been Captain Fantastic again this season. He had a couple of silly sendings off against Palace and more recently against Wolves. But, he's led from the front. He scored a couple of captain's goals. That goal against West Brom obviously should have stood. He should be playing for England. You can't convince me that Mings or Cody is any better than him. He is now, as Glenn Murray said last season, I think it might have been the season before, always got to get a mention of Glenn in somewhere. He said that Lewis Dunk has sort of grown up to be sort of Mr. Brighton over Albion and is the man. He's the man you associate with Brighton now, not Anthony Knockhart, people like that. You know, he was always the poster boy. It's Lewis Dunk. And, I think we've got him for a long time now, because I think if another club was going to come in for him, they probably would have done by now. So, I'm glad he's one of ours. Well deserved, in my opinion.
Okay, brilliant. Andy, give us your reasoning as far as you picked on Yves Bissouma.
Well, to be honest, it was a coin flip between Yves and Lewis. The reason I gave it to Yves was because I think I'm not sure we're going to have the opportunity to vote for him again, because we have finally developed a world-class talent at this football club. One that is the envy, that should be the envy of all the teams in the top four, not the top six, the top four. And I think he would improve every single one of them. Absolutely outstanding. His woeful shooting aside, everything else he does is brilliant. I've never seen an Albion player be so good in the tackle, so tenacious. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Paul Ince, not one of my favourite players, but when he moved from West Ham to Manchester United, where he left West Ham as a flair forward player, And then Ferguson turned him into one of the best defensive midfielders that this country's ever seen. And I think Bissouma is on that trajectory in terms of the level of quality. Disrupting the other team in the middle of the pitch is so important in the modern game. His ability to win a ball, chase back balls that he's lost and win them back, to prevent getting overrun in midfield, it's absolutely vital, and it's a rare skill, and we've developed a talent that should be worth an incredible amount of money. I would love it if he stayed, but I would understand it if he goes.
Yeah, and when he does win the ball back, Andy, he does it so elegantly, doesn't he?
Just incredible. And it's little bits. It's a toe in here, it's a toe in there. It's not even overly spectacular. It's just efficient. And he kind of does it under the radar. And this is the sort of play that ends up improving your team. And it makes a difference between you being mediocre and you being good or great. Yeah, so I think that's...
Thanks for that, Andy. So Marcus, when you think about this season, what are your closing thoughts on this season and your hopes for next season?
Closing thoughts on this season, as I said at the start of the show, is the fact that, you know, staying up was always the number one priority. And from that, you then want to progress and do better than you did the season before. And whilst, as you said, we've got the same amount of points, you know, we've conceded less goals and we've been more consistent over more matches. And I know we've been consistent in missing the goal, but at the same time, as Alan said, you know, the games that we've been really poor, you could count on one hand, you know, maybe, you know, as far as next season is concerned, it depends on who we hang on to and who we sell. There is a debt. It's been alluded to that we have to sell to plug some financial gaps because of COVID. I do think that possibly Bissouma will be sold to plug that gap. If we keep him, brilliant. And of course, it's who we're going to sign. I mean, the thing is, do we need a striker? Well, Man City's top scorer, I think, only got 12 or 13, Gundogan. But the goals came from all over the pitch. And, you know, our midfield are not exactly known for their scoring prowess. But if we could get one or two of them even pushing to double figures, then that would just push us up the table and improve conversion rate and all sorts. So it's exciting. But we need to see what happens over the summer with regards to recruitment and, you know, hopefully keeping our best players. But if we have to sell them, you know, we're going to get top dollar for them because no one's going to pull the wool over our eyes on those.
I mean, there's the fabled 20 goal a season striker. There's only actually been two in the Premier League this season, and that was Harry Kane and Mo Salah. I mean, but you're right. The goals around the pitch is what's required. And Andy, you know, we've finished the season with a lot of injuries, a lot of players who haven't been in the scene. And it's going to be exciting next season with these players coming back and whatever new additions we've got as well.
Yes, it is going to be exciting. And the thing is, we've missed Tariq Lamptey and Sonny March, who were becoming very, very key players for us. And the players that have stood in for them have done extremely well. And in fact, we did... The second half of the season, I thought we were excellent. So there's genuine competition for places now in those positions. And actually, I totally agree with what Mark is saying. I mean, I think we will buy another forward player. I don't think it's going to be the high profile, in quotes, sure thing, which there never is a sure thing, but that maybe some of the supporters are demanding. I think it will be another sort of 15, 20 million pounds, sort of like this guy may or may not be quite good. Well, let's have a look type of signing. I think that will happen to give us an option. And I think maybe what will be interesting will be maybe players like Aaron Connolly. Do we loan them out to give them a chance to improve elsewhere? Because we didn't get a chance to really talk about him earlier, but I think he's one player that hasn't progressed as we would have liked and he would have liked. But the foundation, we're going into this off season with a much more solid foundation. We've got a better team. Even if we do sell Bissouma, I think we've got cover in that position. And I think we're going to push on. I think it is really exciting. I'm very excited about what we're going to do. And I trust the people in charge. I trust the decision makers at this club now fully, even if it's something, even if they do something that I have not thought they were going to do, or I might not initially agree with. They've got enough credit in the bank for me to trust them. And I think we're really going to push on. I think it was disappointing that we only got 41 points, but the table doesn't lie. We were like 13 points better than the team that got relegated in third from bottom place. We were that much better. We're comfortably a Premier League side this season. The trick is, let's push on. Let's go and nudge ourselves further up the table next season. I think we could do it.
Okay. Marcus, you've been famously critical of Graham Potter. Where are you with that now? And
I think it was more born out of frustration, and we did talk about it a few weeks ago on the show. It's more, you know, it's just that, you know, you can see how good we could be. I still, you know, okay, some of it's tongue-in-cheek. I have criticised some of his team selections in the past, but he seemed to, again, it's he seemed to have had a settled side, and then he had to shuffle the deck because we lost Lamptey and, you know, March and things like that, and you know, and Veltman sort of come into his own. So, I mean, but for me, you know, there's still question marks over the home record. You know, that still needs addressing, which, you know, hopefully with new signings or whatever, it's, you know, the pieces of the jigsaw that are there, it's just putting them all together. I just hope that the start of next season, you know, there is not the obsession with possession-based football and the velvet bag again. It's kind of like, pick your best team and then sort of stick with it as well as you can. I'm a traditionalist like that. But, you know, the future is promising.
Andy?
Yeah, I think that the velvet bag comment, Potter did play around with team selection, certainly at the beginning. I think what he was doing was having a look. I think what he was doing, he was working through his options and he was giving people the opportunity to sink or swim in the... in the first team out there on the pitch. And in the second half of the season, the side was a lot more settled, injuries permitting. He kind of had settled on mostly his first choice in the sort of latter third of the season, which is unsurprisingly the period of the season where we were actually much, much better. And I think this is why I think Potter's been very, very good. He's given everybody a chance. He's taken a proper look at everyone. And then he's made his decisions based on that. And he has made some tough decisions. The decision to get rid of Ryan and bring in Sanchez, it's not one you take lightly. It's panned out. It's been brilliant. So we're all celebrating it. It could have been wrong, but it wasn't. But he had the nerve to take it. He has changed it. He has had to work with different circumstances, losing Lamptey, bringing in and getting Veltman in. What, I mean, amazing. I mean, he should have an award of his own. It's like
the recruitment department should have an award for getting Veltman for 900 grand. I mean,
absolutely flipping out. It was like having the grown-ups finally got onto the pitch because he was absolutely super. And Potter's managed this team really well. If Aaron Connolly cannot head the ball in from 6 inches out in front of an empty net, that isn't really Graham Potter's fault. even any of us should be able to do that, and we are not footballers at all. But we can let the ball hit our head and make its way over the line from that distance. And yeah, and if he'd have done that, we'd have beaten Sheffield United and we'd have had 3 more points.
And we would have finished above Palace. Now, yeah. Andy, you alluded there as well to the more settled team selection towards the end of the season. Obviously, injuries did play into that as well. But Marcus, I want to bring you on this because one of the players that did finish the season, and I'm not going to say he's finished the season strongly, but there has been some impressive moments. And I know you're not his biggest fan, but where do you see Ali Reza's future?
Potter obviously sees something in him. He's not a bad player, as was proved, you know, last season when he scored a couple of goals and scored the overhead kick against Chelsea. And, you know, there's quite clearly a player there. He obviously isn't cut out for defensive duties. Because I know Warren Aspinall a couple of times, like Leicester away, I think, where he was found wanting and Aspinall was on his back throughout the whole game, and from, by the sounds of it, rightly so. He sees something in him that I don't know what it is. I don't even think Graham Potter probably knows what it is.
He sees him in training, doesn't he?
Well, exactly. He sees him in training. Where do I see? I mean, if it was me, I'd ideally see him playing for another football team, get him off the wage bill, because I believe he's one of the highest earners, and that sort of free up some cash for a player that we do actually need. Jambash, for me, is a little bit of a luxury player, and I don't think we necessarily need him. But obviously, if Potter sees something in him, then, fine, you know, he's the manager, he makes a decision, so whether I agree with that or not, it's not my problem.
How would you feel with Ali J playing against us? Would you rather he play for us or against us?
That's a good question. I'd rather he played against us. I just think there's he has moments of brilliance, you know, and he can cross a ball sometimes, but, you know, he's missed a couple of sitters this season, and he just, he's Marmite. He really is. He's a Marmite player.
And we need better than that, don't we?
Yeah, we need Marmite with peanut butter. That's what we need.
I would describe him as an almost but not quite player.
Yeah.
Like Mark says,
I think that's fair.
He's Ali Reza Yahabach is a good footballer. He can play to a high standard. In this league, the standard needs to be higher.
Yeah.
And he has flashes, he has moments that proves that he can do it. He can't do it every week. He can't do it. And we just need better. If he could replicate his finest moments every week, we wouldn't have a problem, because he'd be a fine player for us. And I really like him. I really want him to be a great Brighton and Hove Albion player.
Don't worry, because he seems a nice guy, and all the people like him.
Yeah, he seems a great player, and I feel very uncomfortable with the amount of vitriol that he attracts. Because I think a lot of it is undeserved. Even in the Man City game, he actually did do a couple of decent little bits of defending, and he put one or two really good crosses in, which just weren't met by forward players. But that's his lot. I mean, whether he's that, you know, unfortunate or whatever, we're not getting the results from his play that we want if we are to progress. And
but is that down to him or down to the finishers?
Six of one, half a dozen the other. Yeah. I mean, this is why he's probably still here. I mean, these are decisions that Graham Potter has to make. He sees him. He knows him a lot better than we do. And his teammates do as well. And sometimes the bits don't fall into place, and there's not a lot you can do about it. If he is still here next season, I wouldn't be upset about it.
Yeah,
on the other hand, if he's gone, I wouldn't be upset about that either.
Andy, I think, I mean, those balls into the box, I mean, he's very, very good at putting the ball into the corridor of uncertainty. And it's up to the strikers to gamble. This might come down to the fact that he's not in the side and he's only has a bit part. But if he's on the pitch, and they know he's going to put the ball into a particular area, it's down to Morpay or Welbeck to actually gamble and actually get themselves into the 6-yard box and try and get on the end of it, because he flashes that ball across there so many times and nobody's there. And I just think that we need our forwards need to be a little bit more aware, not just to Ali, but to anyone who puts the ball into that particular area. I mean, Percy Tell does that as well.
Yeah. There is definitely an element of that. And he is just one of the, we've been spoiled this year, because I think this team has been good. I don't think any of the players have been bad. And I know that certain players are coming for a lot of criticism. I think Mopé's coming for a lot of criticism. Ali Reza gets it in the neck every single game, regardless of what he does, whether he does anything good or anything bad. Dan Byrne as well gets a lot of stick from people. Nonsense, in my opinion. All of these people can play football. They've all contributed to this team this season. They've done good things. They do what they do, and they've done the best they can. I'm not going to sit here in judgment and overly criticise them.
And Marcus, it's going to be a record fifth year in the Premier League. What does that mean to you?
It's great because obviously, you know, most of my time watching the Albion has kind of been in sort of like, you know, the bottom two divisions, let alone, you know, the Championship and the Premier League. It's always been, so it's very exciting. And hopefully this, you know, fifth season, we will get our record points tally and hopefully finish the highest that we ever have in the top division, which would be splendid. And dare I say it, maybe even go, you know, deep into a cup competition like the FA Cup, because, the squad's there. And we only just lost to Leicester in the last minute, last time around this season, who ended up winning the thing.
And Marcus, the other point is, as well, I'm asking that question because our tenure in the top flight over the last 4 years has been as bottom feeders, just trying to stay up. This has got to be the year where we push on and try, and so I don't have to ask that question again.
Well,
right?
You've got to bear in mind that every other team also got the same ideas as well. So you need to factor that in. But yeah, it would be nice personally. Let's have a season where we are not still looking over our shoulders in sort of, as Andy alluded to earlier, sort of, you know, December, January time. It'd be nice to, dare I say it, do a Palace where, you know, hopefully not playing their style of football, but just have enough points to not worry about if we lose two or three games, oh, crikey, we're only now 3 or 4 points ahead of the team at the third from bottom. You know, let's be 10 points ahead of the team third from bottom in, you know, December, January time. So we've got a nice little cushion and we're not...
Well,
at one point, I believe Fulham were only 2 points behind us. So,
if you really want to be perverse here, do you know the game that actually kept us safe? It was winning at Southampton. That was the game that kept us up.
And when was that? That was what? April?
March. It was early March.
Yeah, March. You know, let's not have until March, you know, as I say, December. Let's be... You know,
if it's 10 games to go, then we're safe. Then I'm
14th of March.
I'd like to see is just an increase, not 4 or 5 games. I'd like to know that it's 10 games. In fact, that we're not even considered relegation fodder.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
That's the point. And knowing full well that, yes, technically we could be relegated, even though we're 14 or 13th or 12th or something like that, and we're looking over our shoulder, it's because it's not just the number of points that the third to bottom team has on us. It's the number of teams in between. So if you have mid-table all that time, then, you know, at the very least, you have that luxury of not just being the points ahead, but being the positions ahead as well. So, you know, so, and there, like I say, it was officially that it was, you know, whoever it was, Burnley beating Fulham after we'd lost the Wolves. So the 3 games to go, great. But, you know, with hindsight, great. It was actually beating Southampton, and that was back in about March. So, you know, it's just one of those ridiculous things that we don't want to have to. You're quite right, Marcus. Don't want to have to spend our time looking over our shoulder. And I think then therein lies the point about how vital, how important this summer of acquisitions is going to be. You know, none of us are really looking at us being relegation fodder anymore because we know we can play good football and we just have that last bit of, the finishing to go by. So if we can improve on that, and if every aspect of the club is improved on, then we shouldn't really worry. None of us are particularly worried about being relegation fodder, about being bottom three next season. Maybe we should, we don't know. But, you know, if we're going to be seen to make progress, then we really shouldn't have a great deal to worry about. And I have every faith in Tony Bloom, in Dan Ashworth, in Paul Barber, in Graham Potter, delivering just that, because for me, the trajectory is still upwards. And I think once we actually, as fans, come back into the stadium, then the sky's the limit.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, as a final word, the table doesn't lie. We're still in the Premier League. Fifth season. Job done. End of story.
And with that, I think that's all we've got time for, not just this week, but for this season. So thank you to everyone who's listened. Thank you to everyone who's appeared. Thank you, of course, to Phil Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com for your continued support. Thank you to Alan Wares, of course, for being my co-host throughout this whole season. And again, thank you to everyone who's listened, contributed, tweeted, entered the competitions. We really, really, really appreciate it. And
more specifically, thank you to Radio Reverb, who continue to allow us to be sort of irreverent and silly and who we are. They allow us the platform for Brighton fans to host their opinions too. So, and I would say about this, Radio Reverb is not a rich entity. So if you do have a couple of quid laying around after your post-COVID furlough, you please go to RadioReverb.com, hit the donate button, and they will very much appreciate whatever you can throw their way. It's a brilliant community asset, a bit like the Albion, really, except you know it's not £350 million in hock. But thank you to Radio Reverb for hosting us, and more continued success to them.
And that's it. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I've been Ailey Packham. I think we're going to have a really successful year next year. I think it's going to break records for the Albion. And hopefully you're going to be along for the ride with us. Thanks for listening. We see you again next season. Bye.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands, to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for love. What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
He rich. Is he rich like me? Has he taken
any time
to show you what you need to live?
Tell it to me slowly.
Tell you why
I really want to know. It's the time of the season for love.
Rich like me, has he taken any time
to show?
To show.